Hey everyone, you're watching Otaku Movie Anatomy, and today we're going back to the year 2000 to a gothic post-apocalyptic future with Vampire Hunter D Bloodlust.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Otaku Movie Anatomy. So far
away, do you remember Duo's Infinity?
No.
This is them.
I feel like I do remember them. Yeah.
This was...
I like this song already.
Yes. It's so 2000s.
You could tell because all anime 2000 music was always like
always
weirdly inspirational. You know, it always had the female vocalist and it always sounded like they're like going into space every single time.
All right. Thanks for watching Otaku Movie Anatomy, everyone. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and comment on iTunes. Hit that thumbs up on YouTube and follow us on Twitter at The Popcorn Talk. I am your host, Yume Ninja. I almost forgot my name in the spirit of Michelle.
Yeah,
you can You can find me everywhere online at Yume Ninja, and I'm joined by one of our regular hosts.
Yeah, one of our... What happened to the rest of our regular hosts?
Unfortunately, they're here. John and Michelle couldn't make it tonight, but
it's okay.
Max and I here.
Yeah, well, I'm here. I'm Max, and you can find me at MaxSalt at everything on all the social media. So I guess you're going to miss out on our super cool Vampire Hunter D Bloodlust talk.
Our super, super gothy movie.
Can we talk about how gothy that movie is?
Yes.
It's very gothy. It's 2000s Matrix gothy, though.
It is. And we'll get into why that is. So, plot of Vampire Hunter D, for those who aren't familiar, particularly Bloodlust, this takes place in the year 12,090 AD, a young woman named Charlotte is abducted by a vampire named Baron Meyerlink. Charlotte's father hires a dampier who is half-human, half-vampire, named Dee, to find her, and if she is turned into a vampire, to end her life humanely.
Yeah, and apparently all dampier are super gloomy and, like, emo kids that you knew in high school.
This is, like... I love it, but it's like the edgelord of all edgelord.
Oh, yeah,
movies.
Absolutely. He's like the forefather of edgelordiness.
Since 1983. So, yes, Charlotte's brother and father hire Dee and another group called the Marcus Brothers to basically be either one being the first.
Yeah, these guys. Dude is just basically like from a well-off family, and they're just like throwing all their money at them
to
find this girl, bring her back, or you know, bring back her body, alive or dead. You know, just make sure that she comes back.
And in the Marcus Brothers are also joined by another character, a woman named Layla, who basically doesn't hunt vampires for money. She does it for personal reasons, aka vengeance.
Vengeance. You don't do stuff for money. You do it for vengeance.
Yeah,
it's
revenge.
Very clear.
Both groups track down Meyer and Charlotte, they realize that Charlotte has actually run away with Meyer, and they are lovers, and he is hoping to bring Charlotte and himself to his matron, who's AKA, which I think they mean is the vampire who created him, Carmilla, so that she can help them go.
Oh, was that the matron? I did not know that.
So, they don't make it very clear, to be very fair. So they get to her castle, and instead of helping them, she has her own plans, which is to basically kill Charlotte and backstab Meyer.
Yeah.
And that's the plot of the story.
Yeah, there you go. That's basically
that
the whole story.
That is the movie.
Yeah. And so... This was made by Madhouse, correct?
Yes.
And if you don't know Madhouse, they're the animators and producers of Ninja Scroll. Mm-hmm. So when you look at Bloodlust, you're like, oh,
that looks familiar.
This is Ninja Scroll.
Yes.
Like, for the most part, there's a lot of like a lot of references, I feel like, from Ninja Scroll. Like, especially in the action, there's a dude. They're always like throwing stuff.
Yes.
Like, there's always throwing of shurikens or something that's going
something
through the sky.
And like, they have a very distinct style that's very Ninja Scroll. This actually started production in 1997 and wasn't released until 2000. And it was released for English audience. The entire animation was done for English speaking. So,
which is like kind of the weirdest backwards thing.
It was like the first.
Yeah, and I it's weird because like Vampire Hunter D is also like a purely Japanese franchise. You know, Amano was the first person. Like, this was his first, like, one of his first mangas, like one of his first works. So this is like based on like all Amano art. So that's obviously the most Japanese you're going to get.
So I'm going to correct you because you're wrong.
Really? Am I wrong?
Yes.
Oh, shit.
You're wrong.
That Wikipedia lied to me.
So the actual novels are the...
Oh, there's novels.
Yes, they're light novels. There are 30. Right. There are, in total, it's super confusing. There's 30 total novels, not including short stories and novels broken up into separate novels. Mm. The author is Hideyuki Kikuchi, and the original artwork for the novels was done by Amano.
Oh, wait. But I thought he made a manga, or was it just illustrations for the book?
It was illustrations for the book.
For the light novel.
Yes.
That makes a lot of sense.
That's what it is. But a lot of people make that same mistake. A lot of people attribute it because the Vampire Hunter D artwork is so iconic for the Amano style, but it is definitely a light novel, and it has been translated into English. Not all of them, though.
Yeah. But, okay, so let's, going back to the original fact that these are Japanese books, these are Japanese light novels, yet, you know, this new 2000 version of the animation, I mean, there was a Japanese 1985 version, which was, you know, totally old school. It was 85. Yes. You could definitely tell. The tropes are the same. It's very dated. But it kind of has, like, that kind of Pat Labor sort of, like, 80s feeling to it. You know, when everything was sort of animated that way.
Yeah.
Robotech also being one of them. You can kind of see, like, little Robotech kind of animation art style-esque part of it. But the 2000 one is kind of weird because you're just like, why did they make it for English? Like, why did they animate it for English, which seems like a really strange audience. Was it because that Ninja Scroll was popular and, like, they just wanted to, like, get in on it, or?
So, yes and no. The evolution of Vampire Hunter D actually is that it's very Japanese in that it was written by a Japanese person, but it's got this mix of, like, post-apocalyptic and vampire goth novel and Western. He's, like, on the frontier, and it's a very Western setting. I think that 1985 version, and along with Madhouse being involved, had such a strong interest in the West that they did it for Western audiences. But it is also during the same exact time they were working on the Animatrix program anime.
Oh.
Like, for the Animatrix. That's why if you look at Layla, her design is almost exactly like the one from the program. Even down to her hair.
No, I was actually looking at program too, and I was like, wow, there's, like, a lot of similarities. Especially because it's definitely better than Ninja Scroll animation wise. Like, technically it's much better. And you can definitely tell that because I think there's, like, a lot more 3D elements in the 2001, right? Like, was there?
No, is
that all hand drawn?
It's all hand drawn.
Oh, well, that is amazing.
It's amazing.
Because there's, like, some really cool photoreal scenes to it. And you're like, oh, maybe they did it in 3D. It was, like, the first time they did it. But, like, I definitely feel like the production value of Vampire Hunter was definitely noticeably more so than Ninja Scroll, for sure.
Yeah. And, like, so just to give you some background, the original 85 Vampire Hunter D anime was based off the first novel, which was Hunter D is what it's called. Mm. Bloodlust is based off of, it's very loosely based off of the third novel, which is Demon Death Chase, which it is translated into English and you can read it, but there's a lot of differences and it's a lot more grim.
So the first novel is the first movie, and the third novel is Bloodlust, basically.
Yeah, so the third novel is the second movie.
Does that mean that every novel there's some chick that's, like, kind of in love with him?
Yeah, like, it's the running trope of Vampire Hunter D. It's not just women. He'll basically, some shit goes down in a town and somebody has to pay him to go do something to rescue or, like, handle this problem. Yeah. And he'll arrive, and the main chick, who is usually in distress, or in this case, she's like a vampire hunter herself, they kind of have this weird relationship with him, but everybody always talks about how beautiful he is. Like, it's so, like, everybody loves him.
The whole thing is, it's like, I even noticed from the first movie, and especially in the third movie, because I'm just like, this is one of the things that, like, you have this really interesting pace, everything's super dramatic, and then one person just randomly is like, are you in love with him? Like, they say that in both the movies. I'm like, is that, like, a thing? Like,
yeah.
And then it's always, like, this explanation of, like, him be like, I can never love. I am too much of a vampire. Yes.
And, like, I can get into that. But first, I want to go through, I have a slide of the evolution of Vampire Hunter D, which you can see on the screen. So the Amano one is the 83 one.
Right.
85. And then you get to Bloodlust. Then after that, you have the 2007 manga that was drawn by Sakai. And then the last one is the upcoming comic book that is done by...
There's a comic book?
Yes.
Coming out?
They just got a Kickstarter by Stranger Comics.
Ooh, nice.
And the illustrator's name is Michael Brassard. But if you look at 2000 Bloodlust, every single one after that is completely based off Bloodlust. There's similarities to the Amano one, but the 85 one, I don't know where they went with that one. But you can see how influential.
The 85 is totally different from
the Amano art.
Yeah.
Like, the Amano art is very decorative, but like if you look at 2001 Bloodlust D, it's all black with just a gem, and then 2007, and then like 2016.
I thought the thing that was most striking about his design was like his pauldrons with the very Amano looking spikes. Because all right, so if you're not familiar with Amano art, Amano is, I guess you would know him by most of the cover art that he does for Final Fantasy. So anytime you see like flowing hair, it's or locks where it's like there's like a thousand little curls in them. And that's one strand of hair. And then except that their hair is all over the place because it's like being blown by like celestial winds and shit. So like you can, it's definitely that long face, you know, and the very meticulous amount of eyelashes. Yes. So it, like his art is very distinctive.
Yes.
And you're right. In the 85 version, I did not really notice that. It was just the dude with the hat and, like, you know, he wore, like, a cloak or whatever. I'm like, okay, whatever. Fine.
And I think the Madhouse D, it's such a good studio to use that Amano style because Madhouse always does that long, pointy faces with kind of a hook nose and, like, the eyelashes. There is, like, 200 per eye.
Yeah.
It's, like, amazing.
And to know that they, like, hand animated that themselves is pretty interesting. But, you know, like, the silhouette of D, like, because when they introduce D, he's usually, like, cloaked.
Yeah.
You know, or there's, like, his cape is, like, blowing in the wind and, like, the moon is against him, like, silhouetting him.
But then he's so beautiful.
Yeah, but the silhouette is very distinctive. Like, I feel like if you saw a silhouette, just, like, a shape of him, you know exactly, like, oh, that's Vampire Hunter D. And that just, like, proves how much character he has. Like, also, like, his sword is iconic. Like, the great thing about this movie is, like, everything is so vivid and interesting.
Yes.
You know, there's never a design where you're just like, eh, that's a design.
And I think it's like, I mean, I've seen the original artwork for the actual people, the characters from Demon Death Chase. Madhouse took a lot of liberties and kind of upped it. So a lot of what you're seeing in Bloodlust is a Madhouse style.
Yeah.
And you can totally tell all the vinyl suits that they wear and, like, the crosses on the Marcus Brothers faces. That's all from Madhouse.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Because it's very distinct. I mean, I just keep going back to Ninja Scroll because all the Ninja Scroll bad guys or all the Ninja Scroll supplementary characters are always, like, super interesting, you know?
Yeah.
And even the monsters that they fight are, you know, they each have their kind of, like, weird, unique power, and they have, like, their weird quirks, and, you know, like, everything is designed to a T, which I thought was really awesome, because it's, like, it's always, like, interesting to watch. No matter who's talking, no matter what's going on, there's always, like, something for you to, like, be like, oh, this is, like, really exciting.
Yeah. And I think, like, the fact that, like, Yoshiaki Kawajiri, I think this movie is basically at the peak and end of what he did best, because I don't think he had a high hand in anything that came after this in 2000.
Really.
I think he was just executive producer. But the story, I think he and Kikuchi wrote it together. And I think even since I've seen this, it still holds up. I mean, this movie was released, it was meant to be released in the US, and it was only actually released in what some debate is either 6 theaters or 12 theaters. LA was one of the theaters because I remember, like,
because we progressive.
Yeah,
that's
but
why
it's basically what one of the very few first anime that they produced and released in America first.
Yeah,
because Japan didn't actually get to see it in theaters until 2001, and it was English with Japanese subtitles.
Oh, that must be really weird for them.
Yeah. The Japanese language, which I did watch for this, it's hard to come by, and they only released it on like a not even the English version DVD. It wasn't until they released it on Blu-ray that they gave you the Japanese language one.
Oh, that's crazy. I mean, even watching it now, like, I watched it on YouTube in, like, potato quality, but the potato quality was still, like, excellent. Like, you know, and it goes to show you that you can digitize everything now, but you're just never going to get, like, that really nice style, like, that kind of weird organic crispness of like, hand-drawn. Like, I feel like I really want that to come back, you know? Yeah. Like, a good portion of Miyazaki movies are good because of that. Because they're hand-drawn, yeah. You know, and Akira is wonderful because of that. I mean, of course, it takes a crap ton of work.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a lot of violated labor laws. But, you know, that's what you sacrifice for good art.
Yeah.
You know?
It's but, just... I mean, it holds up. Like, I think even watching it in the Japanese version this time, this is, like, my second time watching it in Japanese, but I notice a lot of things, like, there's a lot of differences in the English version and the Japanese version, like, as far as dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the way the artwork is done, like, you could literally release this tomorrow and say, like, we just did it last year, and I would believe it, because it's so well done.
Yeah. And I mean, even now, like, that story is just, like, so beyond the cusp of all of the crap vampire things that we've had in the past, like, 10 years. Like, it's so hard to describe because the story is very intricate, and it's not really necessarily about, like, you know, the vampire being like, blah, and being, like, this scary figure. It's like an empathetic character, which is very hard to come by because, because vampires are either one, like, infallibly cool, mm-hmm. which is really the most annoying trope, or they're like total monsters, you know? I would say if there's an example of something vampire-y that is close to this, it'd be Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yes.
Because to a certain extent, Bram Stoker's is really more about just like him trying to find like love again.
You know? But then you also have like, there is a bit of, because I mean, at the core of this movie, yes, it's kind of like D from like kind of following D, but you get this very sympathetic vampire. It's a mix of Bram Stoker's with, like, Interview with the Vampire. Like, these are the saddest vampires in the world.
You know, another good theme is that I think both the original and this Bloodlust version has is, like, we are vampires, and we are, like, you don't understand what it's like to live all of these years. Like, the first one is pretty straightforward. It's more like Dracula, except, like, if Dracula was, like, a fuckboy.
Yes.
Like, his whole thing is just, like, I just want to, like, you know, do immortal and, like,
just have her. Young, pretty girls.
Yeah, young, pretty girls until, like, I get tired of them, and then I'll destroy them, and then I'll just get more young, pretty girls. And you're like, well, you are a very unlikable guy. I hope you get stabbed by a sword.
In this one, you see the two opposites of Meyer, who I don't know if they actually stated, but, like, he doesn't take life needlessly. Like, if he has to take a life, there's a reason. Like, he has to feed. He just doesn't go around killing. Because in this world, the vampires are the nobility and ruling class. And for centuries, they were just killing people like cattle.
Yeah.
But this is at the end of it when there are less vampires. And he's very sympathetic to humans. Whereas you have Carmilla. And Carmilla, who is killed by Dee's father. Dee's father is Dracula, by the way.
Yeah.
Because she just had an insatiable bloodlust. So you have this, like, cruel, monstrous, like, vampire who's very beautifully drawn, and then this very sympathetic one.
Can I mention one of my favorite scenes is where she goes up and she sees this picture of Carmilla, and the words that come out of her mouth is, "Nice hat." And you're like, what the fuck are you on? She's not wearing a hat at all.
It's her hair.
Her hair is, like, this large. It's, like, these tubular things, and it's, like, regaled and everything. It's like, bitch, do you know what a hat is? Like, that's... I mean, I don't know why. It just, like, automatically took me out. Because they're in, like, this crazy gothic castle.
Yes.
It's, like, super future, but it has all the, like, crazy, like, gothic themes in it. And you're like, wow, that's beautiful. And then the only word you can say is, nice hat.
Yeah.
Plus, it's like this.
Carmilla, when you introduce her, they don't tell you that she's a ghost of a vampire. Her actual body is, like, at the top of these fucking stairs. And, like, it just, you, like, of all these things you pick out, like, a hat that's not really even a hat.
Yeah. And just, I don't know why I thought that was super funny, yeah. But I just, like, kind of, like, busted out laughing. Another thing I think this does really well is the fact there's, like, this underlying conspiracy with mm-hmm. Camilla. And, you know, he's going over to like, kind of, like, find refuge from, yes. from her, from his mentor. But really, like, she's the one that's planned all of yes. this from the very beginning. And I think the thing that they do really well in this, and I don't know why, it's kind of this trope to have, like, in Japanese animation, to have, like, a lot of exposition
yeah.
that just kind of, like, you know, they just kind of, like, talk about it for no real reason.
Yeah.
Except to, like, conveniently explain things.
Yeah.
And they don't really explain a lot in this. It's a lot of, like, they do a lot of showing, which I thought was a very, like, surprisingly well done, like, light-handed touch that they put into yeah. this, which just adds to just how great this movie was, even to a certain extent, even better than Ninja Scroll, because Ninja Scroll was a lot of exposition.
Yes, Ninja Scroll had a lot of exposition.
You know, there's always, like, I'm going to explain my powers, and I'm going to explain this conspiracy. Vampire Hunter D, like, almost all of it is just showing. Yeah. And I'm just like, that is a good example, even in cinema today, yeah. of how it should be done, you know, and just like these subtle cues, and then it's these, and then it's like this big reveal that even when they reveal it, they don't even like tell you how to connect the dots. It's yeah. more of a thing that you're like, oh, here are the pieces. Mm-hmm. Holy crap. That's really amazing.
Yeah. It's true. Like there's so much subtlety in this yeah. movie. But yeah, like with that, let's get into vampires in anime.
Oh, yeah. I guess it's just, like, vampires are, like, one of the most overused tropes, especially in anime, I feel like. I mean, maybe not overused, because I feel like we also use vampires as much as Japanese people do. But Japanese people just love the shit out of vampires. And, you know, obviously it's...
Yeah.
You can understand why. But let's see. I guess the one that everyone knows and is the most popular, it would be Helsing.
Yes.
Like, everyone knows Helsing.
Everybody knows Helsing,
yeah. And it's just, I don't know, what's your favorite, like, vampire-y thing? I have a list. I mean, so we're going to go through the list.
A favorite, like, vampire trope, or?
You're like, what's your favorite vampire character? Well, if you saw this and you're like, I want to see more vampire anime, like, what would you watch?
See, this is the problem, because my favorite vampire-related thing is Vampire Hunter D.
And you're going to say that, and that's why I give you options.
Yes. Other than Vampire Hunter D, I have to say, well, in anime?
Yeah, it can be anime.
I have to say it's Blood Plus.
Oh, Blood Plus. That's a
Blood
good one.
Blood Plus was an amazing yeah. series.
If you don't know what Blood Plus is about, like, a girl, like, in high school. And she ends up, like, being... I guess she ends up awakening her blood, I guess. But yeah. this is based on another movie called Blood, the movie. And that's yeah. actually another very popular movie. I can't remember when it came out. I think it came out like 95-ish. Mm-hmm. But if you're really into vampires, that's definitely another one. And yeah. if you know anything about Blood, it would be that it's like the schoolgirl. And then she kind of just has a sword and she takes yeah. down these like... very more monstrous-looking vampires, yeah. you know? I think they're... What are they called? Like,
they're called Chimera.
Are they called Chimera? Chimera,
yeah. In Blood Plus, they're called Chimera.
Oh, I think it was Cordyceps or something in,
yes, in
the
in
movie.
Yes, in Blood, the Last Vampire.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. So it's, you know, it has this kind of, like, conspiracy. Did you... I forgot this, but they made a live-action movie of Blood.
Oh, my God, it was terrible.
Yeah, it's really bad. It, like, makes no sense. All the cool stuff they just took out, and they just... Oh, man, and this is the thing that I hate the most, is, like, if you don't know how to speak a language, don't pretend to yeah, know how pretend. To speak that language, because they do, and it's, like, someone that doesn't clearly speak speak English very well, and then they just have, like, this whole monologue at the end, and I'm just like, this movie was going to be a train wreck to begin with, yeah. like, let's be honest, but, like, yeah, it's bad.
Yeah, so. As far as vampire stuff goes, like, I really liked Blood Plus just because it's, like, yes, it's Saya who doesn't realize that she's, like, basically one of the potential queens to this entire, like, race of monstrous yeah. vampire beings. And then she awakens, and, like, there is a lot of complications and nuances to her actual life because, yeah. like, her sister ends up being her mortal nemesis.
Spoilers. Hello.
Whatever.
I didn't finish the second season.
Fuck you, dude.
The cool thing is, good response. The cool thing is I think it's like every time vampires appear in things, it's always like the blood is an important part. And I feel like that's a thing that like, I would say Interview for a Vampire kind of has a very interesting like blood lore, which is, you know, you can't drink the blood of the dead or like, you know, you get other memories. Like there's always some sort of like trope that they use. I feel like the thing about Japanese anime, it's like they emphasize that. Yeah. So it's like they use their blood to turn it into scythes and like spikes and stuff or like...
Because their blood is a weapon.
Yeah. Blood plus it's like she uses her blood to like basically overtake all the other like, I guess, chimera blood, you know, like the unclean blood.
Yeah.
So it's like there's always that super shonen action version of it, which I always thought was like cool. And Helsing is another beast altogether. I would say Helsing is my favorite because it goes through a bunch of like they're vampires and then there's like werewolves and it's not traditional. It's something that's super unique, you know, but it definitely goes within like this abstract power of like Bram Stoker Dracula where it's like I have a dog, but it's like his dog is like, I don't know, this giant 12-eyed monstrosity beast that like... Yeah. I don't know. But it's definitely one to check out. If you haven't seen Helsing, shame on you. Let's see. There is also the new one that came out, which is Owari no Seraph. And that came out recently. And it was a pretty popular hit. It's basically demons versus vampires. And there's, you know, another weird thing is, like, I don't know if there's any, like, American thing where, like, the world is just the vampires have taken over society. Like they're just like this integral. They're just like the top dog. Like I feel like that doesn't really exist. Maybe
you know what you missed on this?
What?
Dance in the Vampire Bund.
It's right here.
What?
It's
where is
right
it?
Underneath.
Oh shit!
Yeah, Dance in the Vampire Bund.
Because that's like that. We're like it's kind of similar. Where like vampires are kind of a ruling class. They have their own society.
Yeah, and then that one is different because it's like, hey, we're vampires. They out themselves and like we're gonna integrate into society. Let's see if there's an American movie. What the hell was that called? I can't remember. God. I can't remember. Never mind. Willem Dafoe's in it, and the dude from Xanadu, which I can't remember his name. Ethan Hawke.
Oh, God, I know what you're talking
Chat,
about.
Chat, if you know what I'm talking about, please, or I guess Omar, seeing how you're the only one chatting, so I'm just going to talk to you.
Omar.
Yeah,
if
just
you know
look that
Ethan
up.
Ethan Hawke movie.
Yeah, the Ethan Hawke movie. I can't remember the name of it. It's not From Dusk Till Dawn. But that's also a vampire movie. And that's a good one, by the way.
Yes.
So let's see. What other things can I recommend? JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, I totally forgot was about vampires in the beginning.
Yes.
Yes.
I totally forgot that it was about vampires, too.
Yeah. And I just remembered how weird that was because I had not seen the first season of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. And I was like, is this about vampires? And that's where Hado comes from because it's like it's them gathering power from the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes into like Dio is a vampire, that's why he keeps staying alive, and that's why he was able to take over the body. But then for some reason he lost all of his vampire powers, or he was still a vampire, right?
But it's like
I can't remember.
He's not really a vampire anymore in the traditional sense of what we think vampires are.
Yeah.
He's just kind of immortal now.
Yeah, in the second season too, he still fights the other vampires, or I guess the superhumans that I guess they were vampires. Yeah, so. That's how JoJo starts, and now we get this where they're like trying to find serial killers in like a suburban home.
Okay.
Yeah.
But Japanese vampire, they fall under like various cliches of like it's really ridiculous and silly, like Nyampire, which is like a cat.
Nyampire is
a cat
great.
Who's a vampire. And then you have things like Vampire Knight, which is like super shoujo, like I go to a school and the council is all vampires and they're beautiful and they all want my blood.
It's basically the Twilight of. And by the way, Japan has done Twilight for us like multiple times.
Yeah.
So
Twilight
it's
is
like,
not a new thing.
No, Twilight is old hat.
It
America.
Is.
I hope you guys know that. Daybreakers, it's called. Thank you, Omar.
Yes, Daybreakers.
Yeah.
Yes.
And let's see, Shiki is a good one. That one's more psychological. A Bakemonogatari, but that has a bunch of other, like, monsters in it.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys haven't seen it. It's definitely one of the more visually interesting series out there. It's not necessarily about vampires. It's just like it's has about
vampires
different,
in it.
Yeah, it's like different. It's about like different yokai.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there's that. I don't know. I think that's about and Trinity Blood. If you guys haven't seen Trinity Blood, that's like that's an oldie but a goodie.
Trinity Blood is good visual. I did not like the story, but visually it's good. But it definitely, like, Japanese vampires in the sense. And, like, I think Vampire D.D., it gets a lot of roots for... I think it should get a lot of props for being one of, like, the bigger first Japanese vampire, like, tropes. I think it built a lot of what they see as vampires. Like, the being super beautiful, mm-hmm. but all powerful and stuff like that. Yeah.
I feel like that was... That's always kind of been a... like, predicated image. Because it's, like, Interview with the Vampire definitely mm-hmm. came out before Vampire Hunter D. And I feel like that... No? Wait. No.
The original Vampire Hunter D?
Oh, okay. Yeah. The original Vampire
Hunter D. Bloodlust. I think Interview with the Vampire had a lot of influence in Bloodlust because of the love story and, like, the way that D and Meyer, they're portrayed as very, like, depressing, gloomy, and lonely. But...
What was the first thing that was, like, very much, like, oh, vampires are beautiful?
Yeah, like, for me, I mean, I can't say I've done a lot of research into it, but, like, for me, Vampire Hunter D was one of those firsts that I ever saw. Like, it was my first exposure to a dampier, which is, like, an actual thing that is in lore. But, yeah, like, the whole beautiful, lonely vampire kind of shit, like, that's my first experience with it.
Yeah.
And, like, that's 1985. So unless there's, like, some other Japanese anime that, like, superseded that, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I can't really think of anything either. And by the way, Underworld, the new movie, is coming out, which I don't know why we needed a third Underworld movie after
the fourth
Underworld movie after the first two or the first one. I would have been okay with just one Underworld movie.
Yeah, that's true. There's too many Underworld movies. Let's get into comparisons. So like I said, I watched the Japanese version and Max watched the English original version. And he also watched the old 85 version.
Yeah.
There were a lot of things that I just want to point out. The English script is all, like, there are a lot of parts that are completely different or omitted in the Japanese version. Because the one that I watched, there was Japanese language, and I've watched enough anime to kind of know what's happening, but the subtitles were all from the English version. And I've watched the English version so many times, I know that it's from the English version. But there's, like, a part where, like, Meyer and Charlotte are riding in the carriage, and he's like, who's going to mourn the vampires when we're all extinct? That part does not happen in the Japanese version. Nothing is said.
Wow. That must have been for a very awkward carriage.
The hat
ride.
Thing... doesn't happen in the Japanese
version.
Well,
they're missing out on some comedy gold.
Yeah, the biggest part that is super different is in the novel, Demon Death Chase, Layla is the youngest sister of the Marcus clan. And the brothers do a lot of bad things to her. I will just say that. They do a lot of bad things to her. In the Western version of it, when they talk about it, she says, oh, I was like... found and, you know, like, I joined up with him later after my mom died. They allude to that in the Japanese version, but she definitely calls him Nisan. Like, at first I was like, wait, did she just call him, like, brother? And I was like, is it because they're familiar? No, like, at some point they also call her their sister. So, like, that is very, like, much in reference to the book because they're all from the same clan. And she is the youngest sister and they beat her and do terrible things to her. And so the reason why she ends up falling in love with D in the book is because he's the first person that's nice to her.
Wow, that's messed up.
Yeah, it's real dark. So,
that's a totally different side of this that I didn't notice.
You won't see any of that in the English version, but if you understand enough Japanese from watching anime, you will catch it.
Interesting. It's very... Is that in the books at all?
Yes, the books go into great detail.
Well... they seem like assholes,
yeah,
to be
then,
perfectly
so,
honest.
Like, they basically make it so that the Marcus brothers are absolutely detestable. But in the anime, they kind of allude to this kind of, like, love caretaker relationship between Layla and Grove.
Yeah.
In the book, he is the nicest one to her. But, like, Kyle and Nolt and the other ones, like, they're super, like, they beat her and they do, like, really fucked up shit to her.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's messed up because those guys die really quickly.
Yes. It's they're dead.
The dude with the hammer spike, like he comes out and he like kills like 12 vampires. He's like, all right, that's cool. And then the next scene, he's dead.
Dead.
He's just straight up dead. Like he doesn't even get to swing his hammer or do like some incredible battle thing. He just like stands there and then dies.
I want to point out that like, because that's Nolte. His voice is John DiMaggio, and like
what?
So Jake the dog does 6 voices in this movie.
Oh man!
He does Nolte. He does the sheriff. Uh-huh. He does like the dude at the end with like the priest at the end with like the prayer at the funeral, and he does like a couple other voices. I can't remember, but like I was like, he did 6 voices.
All right. Okay. So I have a question. I don't know if you know this or not. In the original 85 version, who voices D? Because I feel like. I want to say he's Seijiro Hiko from, or maybe it's Saito. Oh my god, maybe it's the person that does the English voice for Saito in Rurouni Kenshin. I think it is. But he definitely is someone in Rurouni Kenshin. And when I heard his voice, I looked it up and everything. I couldn't find it. So if there's any internet sleuths out there, please tell me who the voice actor is. Those brothers are crazy, but I really like Grove, like his power, where he like uses that I guess like celestial body.
It's like
doom laser thing.
Yes, it's like there's a lot more Christianity in the anime, and I think it's because Kawajiri himself really likes Christian imagery. Mm-hmm. But like Grove's whole thing is like the whole like Holy Spirit kind of power.
That's why
like Nolte has like a giant cross on his face, and they have a cross on their tank. But, yeah, I liked his powers a lot. Like, I didn't really understand them.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's very, I guess, you know, like, that makes, he's kind of one of the more interesting of the brothers. Because, like, the other three are, like, very predictable. They're just, like, kind of assholes at, like, action, you know? Yeah. And you're like, okay, whatever, sure. You know, like, they're very generic comparatively to him, where he just, like, I guess he uses this this sort of like serum or something that like clearly wrecks the shit out of his body. But like then he turns into like this basically laser spirit, and then he just shoots lasers and is like destructive force. And that's the whole thing. Is I thought that was a very good part because I'm like, okay, you guys fight vampires and you guys are pretty good, but like there's
so many of them.
Yeah, there's so many like super powered monsters out there. Like, how do you even cope? And then you like look at him and you're like, oh I see.
That's how. Yeah. That's how.
And you're like, it makes sense.
So, because like, they go into that city where like all the monsters are like, no, we've been paid like $100 million whatever money to protect Meyer and Charlotte. So they're like, we're going to kill you now, D. And then Grove comes in and he just like blasts the shit out of that city.
He's just like a nuclear bomb. And the whole time he's like smiling too. He's like all very euphoric. And kind of like adds like this kind of disturbed vibe to it. Like he's just like super high out of his mind and somehow is like laser man.
Yeah.
So I thought that part was super awesome. And it's like little stuff. Is that, I'm assuming that's not a part of the books, right? That's not like an original thing that they describe in the books.
I don't remember what his powers are, to be honest.
Oh,
I mean, it's been so long since I've read it.
Because I feel like that's a very Madhouse thing to do.
Yes. His powers are very Madhouse. That's why I'm like, I don't know if it's part of the actual like story. Because I know that in the actual book, all I remember is that like Layla, her skill is that she's better at mechanics than her brothers. And she's very good at building and solving problems. Oh. And they treat her like shit.
Oh, okay, well, that's cool. These brothers sound like assholes. I'm glad that they all died.
Yeah, some of the names are kind of different, too. Like, Meyerling in the book, his name is Meyerling.
Meyerling?
Yeah, not Meyerlink, Meyerling. It's, like, there's some weird, like, things
that happen. All of their names are pretty weird.
Yeah.
So
it's, like, a very, like, strange mix of, like, some of it's, like, sounds Chinese, some of it's European, some of it's, like, Japanese. It's a whole mix of stuff.
What was your favorite bad guy? What was your, like, favorite bad guy power?
The bad guys? I am super partial to Caroline, the shapeshifter.
Uh-huh.
I think, like, she was just... I think her design is really cool. It's very Madhouse design.
Oh, yeah, definitely. The whole blending into, like, different textures thing, like, they love that. Like,
yes!
That is, and Shadow Guy, if you can't remember the Shadow Ninja from Ninja Scroll, like, he was basically the same guy.
Same. I felt like he was, like, such a throwaway.
Yeah, it was just, like, a European version of him, you know? I liked the... I thought, like, the werewolf was cool, but, like, they barely use him.
Yeah.
Like, he basically, like, you see this super cool werewolf guy. His mouth opens up into, like, a werewolf mouth. And like, you know, he has, like, this cool werewolf form and kills one of the brothers. And he, like, he just, like, also, like, digs up all these bombs because apparently he's also a dog. And so, like, he fights D. And the whole fight is him going to D. You just see him, like, do a single cut. And he's like, I am died. And, yes. Like, why... Why make such a cool character and not utilize him? And exactly. I wonder if there was, like, a pacing thing. Like, they're just like, it's not in the budget, or it's just, yeah. like, a fight would be too long. But yeah. they just missed out on a really cool fight and kind of, like,
Because I think it's worth reading the book, because I feel like the characters have more to do. Because I'm pretty sure Caroline and the other – I can't even remember the other two guys' names. They exist in the book, and there's, like, a whole drawn-out thing, and, like, the fights happened with Dee and Layla fighting these guys.
Yeah.
And I think it just was pacing and, like, trying to make a movie, like, not 4 hours.
I mean, if it was 4 hours, I'd be okay with it. I mean, they could have added an extra 5 minutes of
fight. They could have literally done two movies and I would have still watched them. And it was amazing.
I mean, I would say, like, if you're thinking of, like, a gothic romance, like, there is really no better example of it.
Yeah.
In my opinion, you know, it's like a lot of people try to emulate that feeling. And this one just kind of, like... Even with the atmosphere of the world, the characters, even just, like, the art style, like, all of it just kind of, like, gravitates towards, like, gothic romance.
Yeah, it's – at its core, this movie is a love story. And then there's, like, other themes, which I wrote down. Just, like, there's this kind of, like, forbidden love between, a vampire and a human. And then there's
star-crossed,
like,
lovers.
Yeah, and then, like, you have this, like, outsider, which is, like – kind of Meyer is kind of an outsider,
yeah.
So is D, because he's not really human or vampire. Layla is an outsider,
yeah.
And like all of this is like incredibly gloomy and sad, and all of them are incredibly lonely. And then when you see that like Charlotte and Meyer have like a relationship, everybody roots for them, like, yeah. Even D is like, okay, well, she wants to be there, and he has to kind of battle with the fact that his mom was a human that was in love with a vampire.
Yeah. And also it's just like man, I totally forgot what I was trying to say. but there was a really cool scene that it popped up into my head. Is like, you know, that scene where he, like, picks up the ring with his sword.
Yeah, well, let's get into favorite scenes. Because okay. We've got a couple minutes left, so let's get into favorite scenes. What's yours?
My favorite scenes. Well, all the fight scenes are really cool.
Yeah.
Like, Madhouse does one thing really, really, really well, and that's fight scenes. The fight scene with the Count and Dee, that's a really good one.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask. What the hell is that hand? They never describe the hand.
So the hand is, it's not really his left hand. It's a parasite that has become his left hand. So like whenever D's in, like it talks shit to him and stuff.
Yeah.
And it also empowers him. So whenever he gets tired or whatever, the hand like eats dirt and gets more powers or whatever. Yeah. And it can also like suck things. And
it like, seems like he's like, it can like, he can dispel spells too, yes, with it. Yes.
It like, it helps give him protection along with like that blue stone that he wears.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like,
but why is it a parasite? Is it like, was it a human before?
I don't know. Cause I think it's not even really described very well explained in the books. He just has it,
uh-huh,
and you kind of accept it.
Oh yeah. He's definitely comic relief,
yeah,
though. Like,
yeah.
even the way that it ends is like, you're going to be like a vampire or whatever, but like, not very well dressed, and like that's how the movie ends. Like,
it exactly.
Was like this hand's quip is how they're like, this is how we're gonna finish off this epic romance novel, basically.
with this quip.
You got it, left hand, you're gonna make it. My favorite scene, I would have to say though, still was, man, yeah, just like that ending scene is pretty. I thought the ending was, like, super solid. So, from the moment, like, not, like, right after the fight, even when they're just, like, talking to each other, and they, like, and he, like, picks up the body, he picks up the ring, and they go up into space, like, that is such a good ending.
Yeah.
Like, if you're looking for, like, drama, and you're looking for, yes, tension, and you're looking for melancholy, like, that scene had everything. Everything.
Because, I mean, it was, like, you didn't actually know if that, like, goth rocket was going to make it out of the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And then, like, of course it was sad because Charlotte's dead and, like, he's still trying.
Yeah.
Like, all of these things were happening. And you're just like, man, this is so, like, it's like a, like, emotional peak of, we're just like, wow.
Yeah. It's just, it's, the storytelling in this is so well done. Mm-hmm. It's like it's almost meticulous, and you got to appreciate something like that. You know, something that can like keep a pace and still be exciting, and still kind of like bring out this emotion. And I'd have to say it's one of those pieces of anime art where you're like, anime can be anything.
Yes.
Anime can be an art form. And if this isn't like one of the shining golden examples of that, I have no clue what.
Exactly. I agree. Like, my favorite, it's hard to choose because I love this movie so much. One of my favorites is that part where, like, they capture, the brothers captured Charlotte, and basically Meyer's like out of the cage in the sunlight trying to fucking get her. And it's like so harsh. And it's just like, I don't get emotional, but I'm like, oh man, this is such an emotional moment, because he basically is like proving to D and everybody else, like, he really loves this girl, mm-hmm. and she doesn't want to go, and he's basically willing to risk his entire being and existence to get her back.
Yeah. And you're so just good. Like, wow, that is dramatic. Yeah. Like, that is that is some real romance. Yeah. Like, oh man.
I think this movie, like, it definitely is like a gothic romance with an amazing, like, it's kind of sci-fi, gothic, post-apocalyptic, and action all in one. It's,
you know, the crazy thing is, like, this is so unique. Mm-hmm. Like, even starting from the world building on, it's every single part of it is just like, wow, that is a crazy premise. That is like, like a bender, like a weak bender of LSD premise, like amazingness, mm-hmm. you know? And it's just the way that they mixed it all together too. It all seems cohesive still.
Yes.
You know, even the robot horses, you're like, the robot horses still make sense in this world.
Or like the weird Art Deco car carriage.
Yeah.
You know, like they blended it, and then the world was so strong.
Yeah, and even though it's gothic, it's still somehow steampunk, and even mm-hmm. though it's still somehow steampunk, it's still like very much that old like gothic trope, you know, and I don't know. If you haven't seen this, you should. Like, this is definitely one of the ones that you can recommend to your friends. Yes. And be like, hey, you want to see some good anime? This is it.
So on that note, let's thumbs up or thumbs down.
We call it, what is it called? To the Lions.
To the Lions. Okay. 3, 2, 1.
Yes. I mean, that was obvious.
It was obvious. I mean, come on. I love this movie, and it's lasted. I mean, it's just held up this like over 10 years. It's amazing.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And I think it's like you said, it's a shining example of what great anime is, and like it's worth referring to people and watching because it's so good.
God, right. I love it. Yeah, and you know, once again, if you also like Ninja Scroll, you might as well watch the copious amounts of violence. So yes, there's also that
exactly.
too. for everyone.
That's it. Thanks for joining us. Next week, John will be picking, and I think Michelle and Jonathan will be back joining us. So thanks for tuning in.
See you next week.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.